settling again into your body. And feeling what it's like for you right now to be sitting here. And again, discerning the direct felt experience of your bodily life taking place. Not thinking about, imagining, or visualizing, but actually feeling what it's like. Like, what is it that tells you that your body is sitting on the earth right now? What is it that tells you your body is upright rather than reclining? If you're drowsy at all, it may be useful to have your eyes open, to raise your arms above your head, as we did earlier, or even stand up and do standing meditation for a little while, if you wish to. It can be very useful. And noticing your body breathing, what that's like for you right now. The sound of the wind, my voice, and the sounds that come and go, allowing them to move through this space of being mindful and conscious of your experience right here. Aware of this body breathing, just as it does. And whatever experiences arise, just knowing them, simply as they are. So I'm very aware it's not easy to just sit in the midst of our experience or to walk, going nowhere, back and forth. Sometimes when we allow ourselves to settle more into where we are, I think we feel and can be touched at times by things that are quite tender or challenging, maybe unsettling or painful. And the common or easy response we have to those kinds of experiences is to somehow want to avoid them or get rid of them. Very natural, very human. And yet that very mechanism of trying to avoid or get rid of difficult, uncomfortable experiences, challenging experiences, tends to lead to a kind of a contracting, a tightening, a closing down. And often we contract or we withdraw, we resist, because in some way we feel like we can't hold what life asks us to hold. We can't quite accommodate the challenges, sometimes the degree of difficulty we might experience in our own lives, of loss, of sorrow, conflict or pain. And equally at times we can't quite hold the sorrow and pain we see in the world, the violence, the exploitation, the conflict, discrimination, injustice, the degradation of the natural environment. And it's really hard to stay open when there are difficult things in life and in the world. And sometimes what we're really needing to remember again is this possibility of opening out into something larger. That there's a way in which we ourselves can't hold all of it. Because that's not really how it works. And rather than resisting what we're encountering, what's actually more useful is to allow that sense of something larger to hold it. In whatever way we might understand or experience that, there's something about expanding our consciousness, our heart, our mind, in the face of suffering, rather than shrinking or contracting. The great teacher and innovator in Thailand, a Buddhist monk in the 20th century, Ajahn Buddhadasa, he was once asked, how did he respond to people who came in great emotional distress to him? And he lived in a monastery in the forest. And he said, when people come in great pain and distress to me, I surround them with kindness, with loving kindness and friendliness, and I send them out into the nature and leave them there until they realize that they're part of it. It's a very, I find, moving expression of his understanding of what it is that actually allows us to hold what's not easy to hold. And I had a very, for me, touching experience of this with a student who was on a retreat I was teaching in France some years ago. And we were camping outside, so we were out in the relative wilderness of the foothills of the Pyrenees, and just in tents, and spending a week outdoors. And this particular person was in really a lot of grief and pain and confusion around the tragic accidental death of a very dear friend of hers not so long before. And she was really quite distraught and unable to somehow hold the immensity of the pain and the unfairness and the loss and grief of her friend's death. And she said one day she was walking, this is after been practicing a few days, she was walking back and forth under these little oak trees that grow in this part of the foothills of the Pyrenees. They're sort of like stunted oak, so they full grown at about maybe 10 or 12 foot, you know, 2-3 meters, and you can kind of, you're very much amongst them when you're walking, they're not sort of giant trees. And she said she was just looking at all the leaves on the ground and suddenly realized that each of those leaves had been lost by the tree above it. And that in some way maybe the tree felt that loss of those leaves, and that every year these hundreds and maybe thousands of leaves were dropped, were lost in that way. And something in her kind of just started to question and wonder. She described this to me very sweetly in a meeting. She said, and then I started to wonder, how would the trees feel about the fact that my friend has died? And she said, and I knew straight away that they too would be sad that Kai, that was the friend's name, Kai, had lost his life. And something in her just settled with that. It was very interesting to see. Something in her settled. It wasn't that it didn't hurt any, that it hurt any less. But something in her settled. And I was very struck by it because, of course, at one level one could look at it and say, well, come on, you know, this is some very, you know, fanciful thinking. The trees don't even know about your friend. They probably don't even know you're here. At one level, that's probably true. And at another level, I'm very clear and confident that she was understanding something. And that was her way of articulating. Understanding something about the fullness of life and the caring of life for life, of which we all participate, in which we all participate. And that when we actually have a sense of that something larger, that being part of something larger, somehow in a strange way it makes sense of even the pain and suffering that may seem to be unbearable. In this remarkable process of life waking up to itself, it seems that there are so many tragedies, so much suffering, but there's also something remarkable and beautiful. Something precious that we equally recognize that's inseparable from this. Because without that preciousness, without that remarkableness, without that, there isn't really a word for this. You could say maybe value. Or it's something we know that is what means we feel the loss of what we care for and love. We wouldn't feel it unless there was something precious in it for us. And that preciousness is something that all of life participates in. Not just the things that we might have singled out. Not just our own life or the life of those who might be close to us. And something about those qualities aren't quite so confined as we might imagine them to be. There's something universal about the preciousness of life. For every living being, its life is precious. Every living thing strives for its well-being in whatever way it can. And this is an expression of a deep love, a deep caring, that is the only thing that kind of, it seems to me, makes sense or allows one to hold the suffering of life and the beauty of life together. To not compartmentalize it, to not separate ourselves from it. To not ever imagine that it's going on out there somewhere else in a way differently than it's going on in here. Because it isn't. It really isn't. And what we have is a place in which in the inner life we can see it perhaps more clearly, more directly in its particulars as they apply to us. But it's actually a framework that allows us also to see something larger. the habitual conception that this is like this for me, but not for others, over here, but not somewhere else. This is a fantasy. All of us wish for the end of suffering. Deeply, deeply, deeply we do. How we might conceive what that might look like could vary, of course. All of us wish deeply, deeply, deeply to feel our connection with life. Because it's true. And because in those moments when we do, it allows something in us to rest. Something in our hearts to rest. And so the natural world is a refuge in this way for us, and can be. To allow our lives to rest in this. So let's take some time for some walking meditation. Or if you'd like to do some standing outside, and if there's somewhere you'd like to be, and just sit beside or underneath a tree or near to something that you appreciate, enjoy, or feel drawn to, you're welcome to do that likewise. But just again, not trying to figure out too much, not trying to argue the point too much about what's being suggested. If it resonates, let it resonate. If it doesn't, let it go. That's okay. What's more important is that you let yourself really be with your experience and whatever comes in response to this. The situation of being here, and equally the experience of hearing what's being spoken about. It's sometimes said of the Buddha himself that he was born under a tree, that he was enlightened under a tree, that he gave his first teaching under a tree, and he died, in fact, between two trees, sala trees. It's interesting to me that he doesn't speak a lot about trees. But I think they were so much a part of the environment and the life and the world in which they lived in those times, where they hadn't separated themselves so much from what was around them as we have done, that it didn't need speaking about so much. But when the Buddhists talked about going to practice, he didn't say, go and sit in a comfortable air-conditioned meditation hall where you can make sure, with some nice padded cushions, where you can make sure that you're comfortable. What he said was, there are these roots of trees. They sound lumpy. There are these rocks and caves and mountain dwellings. Practice now that you do not later regret having not done so. So we have some time for this practice. And it's now 5 to 3. Take 20 minutes for some walking meditation, being outside, and then we can come back in. If we have a bell in 15 minutes, come back in. We'll have another sitting together.